Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the Joint Interim Committee on the Department of Energy Oversight to order. Today we're continuing our review and discussion of agency programs and stakeholder recommendations. We are focusing a little bit on the Energy Development Services Division, which of course you know contains some of the incentive programs, and then also the Director's Office and Central Services. And just starting off, I think that, you know, we didn't quite finish our discussion last time on a few items, and I think we had talked a little bit about the mission statement for the agency, which we'll maybe get to a little later in the presentation. So with that, Beth, do you have any updates on where we left off and where we would like to start with these incentive programs?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I was just reviewing notes from the last meeting, and you had a pretty thorough discussion of the Energy Development Services Division, but I do have a note that you wanted some more time at this meeting to continue. You talked about, primary questions going forward if there are incentive programs, and I think Senator Beyer mentioned answering the questions of whether there's a need to incentivize particular actions. If so, how to do that, whether it's a grant, a loan, or a tax credit, and then importantly, how you measure the outcome of those activities. So I think all of it was around those issues.
And so in that, in light of that, I did, do a little bit of reading of some of the recommendations that have come to us, and there does seem to be quite a bit of support for continuing an incentive program like the RETC and for residential solar specifically as well. In light of that discussion, I think that RETC is something that is utilized, is popular, and a lot of support for continuing it. I guess the question for us is, should we continue it as a tax credit, which some people have informed us that they would like to see this particular tax credit sunset and an incentive program of some sort, though, to continue that work. And I guess from my standpoint, I think that discussion is pretty relevant right now as to whether or not we continue the RETC as a tax credit, or should we be looking at a different sort of incentive program being a grant system. And I think Senator Beyer and I have talked about that a little bit, and so I wanted to open up that for people's thoughts. Do you have any thoughts, Co-Chair Beyer?
As I've looked at those, I guess the real question that comes out of that is one, and this is one I don't have the answer to, is do we still have a need to incent, to have those incentives out there for a lot of these different programs? And I don't know what the answer to that is. I know that in one of the things that we were focusing on in the past has been on the renewable side, particularly on wind and solar, and those prices have come down considerably. The reality is that most of the incentives, to the extent that there are some, are really federal incentives, not state incentives. So that's one side of the issue, is do we really have a need? If we do, I believe that one of the lessons we've learned from the audit that's gone on and the others is that those things from a budgetary perspective, using tax credits are very hard to use and control. Certainly one of the lessons was I don't think anybody, on looking back to the program that's dead, the Betsy, there's anybody would have thought that we were going to have 14,000 applicants. We certainly didn't staff an agency to handle that or have the right kinds of staffing necessarily to handle that. I think that with the EIP program that the legislature enacted, I think it was in 11, that one, if you're going to use tax credits, the idea of selling, having the Treasury sell the credits, create a fund of money, and then use that in a granting sense, that is more controllable. You can cap it. You know exactly what you're spending. You don't have those. You don't have a tail out there for years to come like you do in Ireland. So that, in my opinion, would be a better way to do that. But that sort of begs the question of if you're going to make that kind of allocation, the money still all comes out of the general fund, and it's actually, as a rule, more expensive to finance those kinds of incentives with tax credits than with a direct appropriation. I guess the reality in the past has been is when you couldn't get an appropriation, sort of if you can't go through the front door, sneak in the back. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way we've done that. And I would suggest that if we do continue these programs, rather than just let them sunset as the governor has recommended, that we be very specific as an assembly and saying, this is why we're doing it. I always call it the why question. Why are we doing it, and what do we expect the outcome to be? And to the extent possible, tie any incentive to some type of production metric. I personally like the way the production tax credit works for the feds, because you're actually paying for what you intended to get. But I haven't thought all the way through that. I'm just rambling now, but that's kind of where I'm at on it.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess I need to be reminded, and Beth will have to forgive me if she told us this last time, but did Revenue take a look at this in its tax credit review work? I should say our tax credit review, because I'm on that committee, mm-hmm. and I can't remember if we did a review of this particular credit as we did of the RETC, right? I don't remember doing
so. I don't think you did.
It would be this session, because so it would be in the 17th. The review would happen in 17. Mm-hmm. It's probably something Chris is working on right now, quarterly report.
The sunset's a 17 sunset.
Well, then, this debate can be delayed pending that review, because each one of the issues that has been commented upon will be looked at and considered along with the other half dozen that are on the list of required points of review. So we can punt to that point. And then go through it. And I think the way we did it before, if I recall correctly, we had our Energy Committee look at it, and then we had the Revenue Committee look at it, and I think we actually had another committee, because I think I got to see it three times. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's worth all of that review. I have no problem with that. It may be a valuable exercise, but all the remarks you make about whether we should grant or whether we should tax credit, those are excellent remarks, and that will come up also in that conversation. So my thought is we wait, or just say, hey, it's going to be reviewed in any event, and take it up then.
Well, there are a couple of the other tax credits that will go forward in there. I know the pollution, that's not the pollution control, it's the biomass.
Dairy.
We extended that last time to 2023, changed the metric, we changed the way, we changed it, was on a wet ton basis of manure.
But also thinking of the task of this committee and making recommendations to the legislature, if in fact we're contemplating shifting the RETC to a grant program or some other type of program, we should really be trying to think through that now instead of waiting till the sunset actually happens, so that we're prepared to transition that segment of the tax credit to a new program. Does that make sense?
If I may, Mr. Chair, it makes sense. I would simply say that...
I shouldn't have asked that if it made sense to you.
Well, I would just say that the tax, I don't like tax credits. I'll just start there. And so if it was up to me, I would say I want it always to be a grant. But it's a means of financing something over a period of time that people don't want to relinquish, because you can go beyond just 2 years. And so you have to you can't, it's not as easy as simply saying it's a means of funding it, because it's not. It's a more clever or sneaky way of doing things, and that generally needs a little more discussion. But if you were asking me where I stand on it right now, I would say no. Let's use a grant, because it forces people to actually think about it in a much more refined way than just using the ill-suited device of a tax credit. So, yeah. But this is not an easy conversation if people want that particular benefit, that incentive, and are inclined to pay extra for it by virtue of the inefficiencies of the credit device. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't want the RETC that badly, but I'm guessing there's a whole bunch of people out there that do, and that's why we go through that process and let them come in and make their case in the Tax Credits Committee. So,
it's a little tougher when you get to things like the biomass.
If I may, Mr. Chair. So, just
go
so,
ahead.
Just so you know, I was unenthusiastic about the biomass credit having to do with manure systems, and that deserved a lot of discussion. It got a lot, and I'm sure it'll have a lot more, and I'm happy for that.
Good enough. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. Question actually for Representative Benz. In your revenue committee, will you look into the return on investment efficiency, all that sort of thing, of these various different implements that we're incentivizing, or will you just be looking at the financial aspect of it?
Mr. Chair, my recollection is we look at those things from about every direction anybody can think of, and. I've been very happy with the process, and I think it's improved over time. So I believe we will be looking at that return on investment piece. Yes. And Chris Alanak would be able to better explain that, but that's my recollection.
That's my major concern, Mr. Chair, of the, I think, again, why do we need to incentivize it? If it's a good product, why doesn't the free market just select it and buy it? I certainly agree with Representative Benz that the tax credit things have not worked efficiently, if they worked at all. I think you look at the tail on the Betsy, is something like $350 million of projects out there that have not been redeemed, and we don't know whether they will be redeemed, and we don't know whether they know. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff out there that we're paying for things with future dollars, and we don't even know what we're paying for. And then the return on investment efficiency, that sort of thing, I think needs to be looked at. If I were going to go out and buy something, would I buy it because it's a good product, or am I buying it because I'm getting it two-thirds free?
Representative Vega Peterson.
Thank you. So one of the things I was just talking about was for December legislative days in the Energy and Environment Committee, taking a preview of all the expiring tax credits, because there are a lot that are up related to energy. So that'll be part of just a preview, and probably have Chris come in and talk about it. I think the challenge that we face is, you know, from the policy side, looking, is this a policy that we want to continue? And I would say that yes, the RETC is something that we want to continue. In terms of how to do it, whether it's a tax credit or a grant or something else, the challenge that we come with is it goes two different paths, right? If it ends up in the revenue committee, that's specifically for the tax credit side. And so I do think that there needs to be some discussion before you start the 17th session about what path we want to go down for that. Because if it wouldn't go to revenue, it would have to go through some sort of appropriations. So I think it would be worthwhile to continue that discussion either through this committee or some kind of subcommittee about looking at that, taking into consideration some of the governor's recommendations and what we've heard from stakeholders on it too.
Co-chair Byer.
I don't want to leave the conversation too quickly. I think certainly there's a need to explore this in greater depth, but I just want to challenge a little bit Senator Whitsitt's comments. In terms of return on investment, it's not just the economics of the two that you're looking at. In many cases, the reason, if you look back at why Oregon got into these things big time in 2005, 2007, it was a desire to transform the marketplace and incent something new to happen. So there's a, and sometimes you have to do that. And clearly the record is that we have caused that to happen. You could argue about whether the renewables are the right in the economic sphere in general, but that was a policy choice that we wanted to do. So there's a difference between return on economic investment and whether you're going to change that or not, and in terms of how you structure the program to cause that to happen. I think tax credits are just sort of an inelegant way to go about doing that. I mean, they do work in some places, but I don't think that was a good vehicle to do this on. Certainly other things that we chose to use are the renewable portfolio standard to push the market, and you know, there's been some very positive results for all of the controversy over the financing of a lot of those projects that we've talked about over the last few months. The reality is that in most cases, maybe not all, but in most cases, the projects happened. Things that people were talking about they wanted to have happen, happened. And I think in a lot of cases they wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Representative Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't know if the but-for question has been answered.
Yeah.
I really don't. I do know that we have been subject to a lot of criticism in papers and otherwise other places for not having put appropriate metrics in place when we first did these things. So whatever we do, let's try to let's address that so later folks aren't saying, well, you guys just turned this horse loose with no idea where it was going to go or how big it was going to get. And I think we can do that better than we did in the past.
We've got a good debate going here, but I was just I would say, you know, this isn't the only place we've done that. I mean, we've used it accelerated depreciation and business expenses is one of the things we've used to cause people to turn over equipment faster than they otherwise would because we thought it was good for the economy. The enterprise zone tax credits and the SIP, some of those we've had out there, and you know, having worked with a lot of those, it's questionable whether the but-for was answered or not. But it's, you know, that's, I guess my point, and I've been arguing for the last couple of meetings, is the legislature needs to do a better job when they put these things in place of expressing why they're doing them, what the assumptions are, and what the metrics they're going to use to measure it. And then having done that, making sure that whoever we toss this charge to has the resources, both in terms of quality of staff and numbers of staff to do it, to make sure it's done.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. I would push back a little on Senator Beyer. When you accelerated depreciation actually shortens the tail, not lengthens the tail. And
but the effect is the same.
And you know, we're looking at the I'm looking here at a sheet I got from LRO on the extended tail of the EIPs that we've just, it's a new program for the 20, and this is work in progress, but 2017-19 is $19.2 million. 2019-21 is $56.8 million. And 2021-23 is $83.5 million. So we're creating the same tail on this EIP program as we did the untenable thing we did with the Betsy's.
Okay. Well,
there is a, Ms. Chair. There's a point there that you actually raised a very valid thing that we should consider, that on a lot of these things, regardless of what we think about how we should structure programs going forward, we do have a need to be able to provide some oversight on things that we've already done, because we can't take them away once they've been awarded. So we need to keep that in mind as we talk about what structure the agency should have, that we have to, we do have, or they do, actually the executive has the fiduciary charge here for a while yet. I'm not sure what that is, but there is one that's there.
Well, I think over time, you know, the legislature has stated some pretty broad goals that don't have a lot of those specifics in it, but and so, you know, I think there's still value in a RETC-like incentive. When you're thinking in terms of, you know, trying to reduce greenhouse gases through the implementation of renewables, just generally, and I guess one of the problems is we've laid that out as a goal, but never pointed out when do we declare that we've achieved that goal. And I think without the incentives, some sort of incentive in place, that investment into renewables will diminish substantially. And that's, you know, how I'm thinking about a RETC-like incentive is that it will help continue that stated policy goal of reducing greenhouse gases and implementing a more diverse portfolio of energy sources, particularly the renewables. But we need to recognize that we still need the lights to come on when we flip the switch, the overall goal of having electricity accessible. So, you know, I think, you know, I'd like to, you know, at least come out of this committee, you know, as we're tasked with making recommendations, that that we do look at a way to continue this particular incentive anyway, and whether that's through a tax credit or we make a recommendation to move to another alternative, an incentive program, I think the sooner we, I guess, recognize that, make that recommendation to the legislature and start thinking about how that will happen, and then the further conversations on whether the RETC continues as a tax credit or not will kind of simultaneously happen next session. It may change that discussion a little bit.
I mean, Mr. Chair, actually, everything you say, I'm happy for this conversation. I've been struck, though, by the confusion of the measure of good that is achieved by spending this money on the one hand and the measure of value achieved politically on the other. And so many times there's an enthusiasm for doing these things because it shows that this group is enthusiastic for doing something. And I've said it often, so enthusiastic for doing something, we'll do anything. And the question then becomes, why are we doing it? Is it for truly to save the environment, or is it to show everybody that we care? And I don't know if we have that line on the analysis we do in revenue, because, of course, we are so unpolitical there, and we're very careful about all about metrics all the time.
No. I chuckle for you.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Whitsitt, final comments?
Yeah.
Final? We're just starting.
Final. I think we should be distinguishing between incentive and subsidy, because an incentive is, to, in my mind, a purposeful action to shape consumers' response. And whether that's a rule of government or not is debatable, but that's what an incentive is. A subsidy is usually an incentive that just goes on and on and on and on, and that's what we're doing with a lot of these things. They just don't end. If we're trying to incentivize behavior, then behavior should change without, you know, that, and hey, this is a good thing, and then we're going to go forward and continue to do this. Why do we continue to incentivize it with a subsidy for 10, 20, 30 years? You know, the 2 cent wind production credit is a good example of that. I mean, it's we continue it because the wind farms couldn't exist without it. But was it a good deal? It was started out as an incentive, and now it's a subsidy, and it's a subsidy that we can't let go of, because if we'd let go of it, the wind farms would fail.
See, we put Senator Olson to sleep.
Heard every word.
So, so that's a little discussion about the RETC, and pretty clear we're going to come out with a consensus recommendation on that. How do you feel about biomass? Any comments about the biomass tax credit and whether, I mean, the portion of its sunsetting and the manure is continuing till 2021. Should we make recommendations around that? Should we make recommendations about putting more sideboards around the those tax credits? Should they continue? Let's ask a more basic question.
Okay.
So, I know you're going to say no.
Well, let's not jump to conclusions. I think that the question is, again, are we well suited to do that analysis here? We do this analysis in the Tax Credits Committee. We do it in revenue. We do it in energy. How many conversations did we have on this?
We had a lot of discussion about biomass over the last two sessions, honestly. We were deep in it, if you excuse the point. But, I mean, we did. We spent a lot of time talking about it and trying to figure out what was the right way to, you know, was it wet ton or dry ton, and what's the impact of those? What's the correct price point? Where do you start to incent behavior, or where does it not have the effect that you want it to? And so I think that's a very recent conversation that we've had. And this is, after all those discussions, where we are right now is where we came, you know, in agreement enough to pass it to have the tax extended, but at this different price point.
If I may, sure.
But given, just a moment, but given, you know, that the governor is weighed in on letting tax credits expire, you know, and our charge is to make recommendations, so what I'm hearing is your recommendation should be that, yeah, we should let the revenue committee make these decisions on incentive programs.
I don't think we have to leave it into their hands. I mean, I think if we want this committee to make some recommendations, I mean, I think that's within our charge to do that. I think on that one, though, we've had a lot of robust conversations and decided, you know, as a body to just extend it just in this last session. So, you know, I mean, we could revisit it if we want to, but I think it's covering ground that we've just really recently gone through. Some of these other tax credits, though, that aren't up for renewal until 18, you know, those were teed up to have conversations in the next legislative session, and so they haven't had that recent conversation.
Chair Byer.
And part of it that I singing the same song, but I think one of the recommendations that we could should make is that looking at these, whether they're renewed or not, or whether new ones are put in place, that whenever that's done, that the legislature needs to be clear on what the purpose is. What is it you're trying to achieve with the credit, and how are you going to measure that? And I think the biomass one is a really good example. Not really sure what we're doing there or why we're doing that. I mean, I know what it does, but and sort of the why, what are you trying to generate energy? Are you trying to deal with pollution? It's not very well articulated in the statute why we did that.
Or are we trying to subsidize more kettle operations?
Well, I think you're exactly right. The good question is, how do you list the benefits that you're trying to achieve, or the conduct you're trying to incent in the legislation creating the tax credit? I'll just say for biomass, there is a series of things that fit under that label, depending upon the nature of the biomass, that are not necessarily haven't been discussed yet. One's cleaning up the forest. Another might be reducing fire hazard. Another might be creating jobs in John Day. Another might be generating some modest amount of energy. Another, I mean, they go on and on. The question is, have they been appropriately identified as the reasons for doing what you're doing? As I mentioned earlier, when we're talking about the RETC, is part of the reason there to politically show that this body is concerned about the environment or about energy. I mean, you should put that on the list, and it's going to be hard to measure. And so those types of returns on that investment, lots of debate about whether they're worth it or not. But that is what we do in the tax credits committee and in revenue and in energy, because we've been through this. So I'm just wondering if our group needs to do much more than say, hey, we've got groups already thinking this through and working on it really hard, because we did. I guess another way to say these are. And I just want to, because no conversation about tax credit is complete without talking about the film and video tax credit, which one can look at and bring up all these same remarks as, of course, we all have. Just say it.
But that, Mr. I think that's, you're hitting on my point. You know, when you get into the revenue review, and it may be that you're looking at it through the lens of a return on investment to the state treasury, or we're getting back more than we would have. But that may not have been why it was created. And when you get there, you know, from the implementing agency's perspective, they may not even been measuring the things that you want to look at as revenue. And that's really the assembly's fault. I mean, when we create one of these things, we ought to be very clear on why we're doing it and what's the outcome we're seeking out of it, so that when you get to the sunset, you're reviewing it based on, did it do what it was intended to do? Not to say you couldn't add other factors into it, but that's sort of the basic question. When we set one of these things out there to do something, we ought to know and ought to be able to measure whether we accomplished what we had in mind. I don't know if it's to show that we're politically sensitive, that's a different issue. But
so, sure. I think the senator's ahead of me, but
go ahead.
So it just dawned on me that much of this debate has been in a large part mooted by the limitation Ways and Means now imposes upon any tax expenditure. So we can sit here and debate this for quite a while, but at the end of the day, if you're given $40 million to spend on tax credits, the approach that may have been used in the past, which was issuing them willy-nilly with no regard to cost, is now not available. And so that weighing and balancing of the quality and value of the tax credit has been in large part mooted, because you're given $40 million. I think that was what we had last time around. And you try to go find the tax credits that fit within that $40 million number, and you forget everything else. We can debate, I suppose, whether the tax credits are worthy of more than $40 million, but that is a Ways and Means Committee decision now. I don't know if that was the way it used to be, but that's the way it is now.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Hopi. Two things. One, on the $40 million tax credit cap. The cap is only as good as the forecast. And if you look into the Secretary of State's audit, the Minnickin Marsh audit, the Betsy actual credits were 3,500 times, something like that, more than the estimate by the more than the estimated cost. So I think there's something that needs to be looked at closely. There's another thing here in the Secretary of State's audit letter. It said it is important to note that this investigation was not charged with evaluating whether the expanded Betsy program met its legislative goals of producing energy savings, growing alternative energy sources, and creating jobs at the time of a Great Recession. And I think we should take that to heart, and we should be spending some time looking at answering those questions rather than individual, should we retain this, should we not retain that. We should be focusing on what has worked, what hasn't worked, why we think it hasn't worked or has worked, and what their alternatives might be, as opposed to individual, hey, this is good, this is bad, you know, dealing off the bottom of the deck or whatever. I think that's what we should be looking at here.
I can't disagree with that.
Depends on your definition of worked.
There you go.
There's always a rub somewhere.
That was my job, the pin. Any other comments now that we've beaten up incentive programs back and forth? I think Senator Whitsitt's last comments are
are good ones that we should be looking at. What did it accomplish? What do we want it to accomplish? And let's keep track of it going forward. Those are definitely things that we should be learning.
Mr. Chair, did we talk about SELP already?
We did a little bit last time, but we can continue that.
It seems to me that Mr. Chair, we were interrupted. Am I right? I think we stopped.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. I think we need to talk about it, but I think somebody needs to give us a sense of place of where we are with it.
The SELP program?
You'll have to refresh my memory because I don't recall.
Yeah. Mr. Chair. And I'd ask Mr. Kaplan to correct me if I say this wrong. Where we're at is the governor has put a hold on SELP. SELP has as a whole now. It's a little bit upset because of a couple of projects, but that loan program, the existing loans continue. They're just not issuing any new loans. There is as they reported, the department's reported, I think, for the last four or five biennia, there's a need to cover the hole because of some major projects going upside down. And I believe during the presentation, the department said that if the state wanted to continue, if the legislature wants to continue that, it's a constitutional program established in the late 70s, as I recall, that it could work its way out of it, but it's going to take a cash infusion. A capital infusion to do that, and I don't remember the number about that. My gut level reading it is that one way or another, the legislature is going to have to put some money into it because we don't want to default on all of that stuff. And maybe that money will be recovered over a period of time if it continues. SELP had a really good track record of almost 40 years before all of the euphoria over new things. Energy happened in 2005, 2007, and there were a few big projects that were created during that period of time that didn't work out for various reasons. And sort of moved it into the, as you would say, as I think as the report said, when politics overtook good lending, we got in trouble.
So I have had a number of discussions with different folks interested in purchasing the portfolio of SELP loans and replacing that pile of money now we're carrying as a state with whatever they might pay for the portfolio, and that would then make that money available for us to do with as we would. That's the kind of conversation I'm wondering if this committee is going to be having. Or where does this discussion of SELP fit into the broader charge of this group?
Yeah, my sense on that is that it's discounted. I don't know. That still leaves you with a deficit. And I think that doesn't, the general discussion did not include the large failed loans. They would be willing to buy the performing portfolio. Not the non-performers.
Sure. That may indeed be the case, but that is one way of covering the loss, as opposed to going and asking for more money from some other source. And so, but Mike, that takes me back to the question: are we going to have this conversation within this group as part of the broader charge of this group, or is it something that we just make note of and move on?
I thought it was our intent to have that discussion about this SELP, and I also have heard similar comments that Senator Beyer referenced, that the SELP program is outside of a couple of bad loans. Perhaps we need to fix our underwriting and financial management of that portfolio by moving the financial management of SELP to Business Oregon, for example. Once the loans have been met the criteria for the Department of Energy, that an underwriting scenario go on and loan portfolio management go on in Business Oregon. And that was one of the proposals I have heard. I've also heard the the offer from a private entity to buy, to basically buy the program and run it. That's a different approach, correct?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair. So the question is, does this group want to debate, A, do we continue the CELT program? And if so, if it's going to be continuous, we'll just fold it up. Who continues it? That would seem to be two issues that are before us, or not, depending upon whether we're supposed to do something with it here. To me, it's no different than the other discussions we've had regarding tax credits, except that first we have to decide if we want to continue the program. That's the decision mm-hmm. Do we want to still have a small energy loan program? That's the question.
Well, if you're asking me specifically, I can't speak for the committee, but I would say yes.
It's interesting. It's actually bigger than just an energy program. Actually, the enabling language in the Constitution is broad enough that it could include seismic things and other things like that. That's a much broader question. But
then, if I may, so if the answer is yes, then the question becomes, who's best suited to manage the program? Should we pick it up and move it out of this department, or keep it here and make it work better, or what? That's the question.
Senator Whitsitt.
If the program is to move forward, the SOAP program, and I think there is some reason for it, we have to find, I believe, a way to perpetuate it as a small energy loan program versus a venture capital infusion of cash into some wild idea. I mean, that's where we got in trouble in each one of these situations, the bad loans. I do not know this for a fact, but I will bet you about anything you want to bet that these outfits went to other bankers and so forth and couldn't find funding anywhere except the government. And we were the only people willing to put in venture capital because we were using other people's money. And not maybe harsh, but I mean, that seems to me what happened. And you get back into, if you're going to do a small energy loan thing for individual families, individual farms, or individual businesses or whatever, small businesses, it insists, first of all, it says small. We should keep them small. And secondly, they should be vetted by a group of people who understand loan and risk and whether that's business Oregon, the Business Oregon or whoever it is, but I mean, or whether it's created in the Department of Energy, but it needs to be somebody that actually can understand risk.
Senator Beyer.
Yeah, I agree with that completely in terms of the finance side. And that, in fact, was the recommendation that we heard from the Department of Energy as well as the governor. We've set up, this is something on the economic development side I've worked on with you for years. We set up an entity to do the finance management and the Infrastructure Finance Authority. And I think to the extent we do any of these kinds of programs anywhere in state government, that's who should manage the loan portfolio. It's the only place you get enough volume to get economies of scale. But there's a companion piece that goes with that in terms of, does the program fit? Does the application, whatever
qualify.
That is, qualify? And Business Oregon is not, that's not their staff expertise. They can do the financial examination of, does it make sense financially, but not necessarily on the program side. It wouldn't be unusual to have that. I mean, you have it now on wastewater programs and some of that DEQ and IFA do together. But I think it's back to Representative Benz's question. First is, I think it's, does it make sense to continue the program? Is there still merit in doing that, and for what? And if you do, then how do you manage it? And I believe that the answer is, if you're going to do the loan program, you use the IFA.
Senator Olson.
Wait. And I apologize because I was out for a while, but did we receive an Excel spreadsheet on all the CELT loans that explained everything that was going on, what they're doing, and how they were performing, and their rate of return, et cetera?
I believe you did receive a spreadsheet. I'm not sure. I'll have to check. I'm not sure exactly what information was on it, but I think there was a list. Let me look. I'll continue the discussion.
The reason I ask, it just appears to me that we're making decisions with a bag over our head. We don't have all the details, and we're just kind of stumbling around saying, should we or shouldn't we? It's kind of like playing golf without a ball. You can come up with any score you want. The fact is that we need to know in depth the details of what the loans do, how they perform, and are they working or not working? And if they're working, what did they do to become successful? And if they're not working, what did they do to become not successful? Then we can evaluate and say, this is the way we want this to go, not the way that this unsuccessful portfolio is working. And that's my point is, did we get this information? Because I, even with the Betsy and the Betsy, we just kind of we're beating around. I just think that this legislative body is an ATM. People come in with a great idea. I want to build this, and we shoot money towards them. And there's no in-depth study or discussion as to will it work or won't it work. Biomass, for example, you build a biomass generator for cow manure. That works if the cow manure is right next to the generator. But if you have to haul the cow manure in, generate, and then haul the cow manure back out, you'll lose money on the program. Nobody wants to do it. And so we put money into these things with the knowledge that they're going to fail. But we did it because, as other folks have said, it's feel good. We're actually doing something to help the environment, but it's not long term, and we need to be long term.
I hear you. I don't know that I totally agree. I know Beth did find a list of loans that did not perform, and I think that, you know, those loans are made for a variety of reasons to generate some small energy projects, which helps in local economies, helps with jobs, and besides some of the environmental impacts that may be less than other forms, we have those sorts of ideas about these would be great investments. And I think just like any other investment, whether it's done by Chase or the federal government or the state, they all have inherent risk. I can tell you that there's lots of loans that the professional sector put out there that went upside down. I know we haven't forgotten 2009 and 10 and 11 with all the subprime mortgages that went upside down. And I think there's risk to making loans, but you make loans as an investment to grow for growth. And so I think that do we need a better handle on the financial management than has happened in the past? Yes, I believe we do. And that's why I agree with Co-Chair Beyer that it should go to somebody whose expertise is managing that loan portfolio and underwriting that loan to help minimize the risk that we're taking, which we could probably do a better job of than has happened in the past. But it's still going to take the Department of Energy to determine whether this project's going to meet the criteria of achieving those energy projects and meet those criteria.
And Mr. Chair, I agree with you on growth, but growth doesn't happen when a project is built, people are put to work, and then it closes within a year. That's not growth. That's a year project, and flushing money into a community for a year, it doesn't help the community because those people are excited about getting a job, and then they lose their job, and they're in the same position they were the year before.
Yeah, there's certainly an inherent risk in making loans. Chair Beyer.
Beth has pulled up the stuff here in the history of the program. Just almost 1,000 loans have been made with a 5.5% loss ratio, which is pretty good, until you add the two big ones, actually there are three, that were made for political purposes, and those are upside down, and that's what's causing the program to go upside down. The program as it existed before and still exists today in the small thing has performed well as a loan program. It's just the three big ones that were made for political purposes, and were economic development investments and didn't work. So we do have the data. They did give us the data, and we had a pretty good discussion on that, as I recall, when they presented that program.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the trouble is I can't recall the discussion, but it has to, we have to go back in evaluating the SELP program to ask ourselves if the, it's not whether or not the loans were successful, it's whether or not that which was purchased by the money advanced energy, I guess, small energy loan program. Originally, the program would have been put together for the purpose of energy loans, and there must have been some value to that at the time. I don't know what it was. And then over time, perhaps it's changed into something more green, or I'm not sure what. But until we look at that program and look at what its original reason for existence was, and then try to measure whether it achieved that outcome, we don't know whether we want it or not. Because I'm not inclined to have a state bank. There's lots of banks. So we have to ask ourselves, why were we doing it? And perhaps the department told us, and I've simply forgotten. But having the measure of the value of the program is what we need, and perhaps we haven't misplaced it mentally. But we could ask our department to come up and say, hey, what's the measure of the good of all the money we've loaned out there, other than the jobs, and other than having a portfolio that we're trying to figure out how to recover? What was the good that came from that? And what I fear is, just like the Betsy, we told these people to go do this, and by God, they went out and made those loans with no regard to anything other than we hope we get our money back. And that's, we couldn't blame the department for that if that, those were the instructions we gave them. Or yeah.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. This is just a little off subject, but this is again from the Betsy audit. I want to read this because I think it's kind of on point. Through a forensic data analysis, the investigators found that out of $1 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion in tax credits issued, there are $347 million worth of tax credits where records contain evidence of risk factors that were concerning. Areas of concern discovered by the investigators include direct conflict of interest, projects that were never operational, businesses that closed or went out of business, indistinguishable, missing, or suspicious eligible cost documents, projects with unaccountable or unaccounted for equipment, brokering conflicts and intermediary issues, and illogical projects. That's probably one of the more damning paragraphs I've ever read.
Yeah,
and,
but...
And so my point being that the legislative body needs to do a whole lot better job than we're doing, and to Representative Bent's comment, we're just throwing out money and hoping something good comes of it. I'm perhaps paraphrasing you and maybe not accurately, but it's we simply need to do a better job of putting sideboards on how we spend taxpayers' money, and it's a lot more relevant than the policy issues. If the, you know, I mean, the legislative body makes policy issues, some of us agree, some of us don't, but we should all agree that if we're going to spend taxpayers' money, we should do it well, and that we got to do a better job. And so I think that we should spend a little more time looking at what went wrong with the Betsy program, what may be going wrong with the EIP program. And we're dissecting right now what has gone wrong with it, what we think has gone wrong with the SELP program, and try to create appropriate sideboards to keep it from happening as we go forward.
Well, I'll agree that we should be looking at these things with a lens of how we do this in the future and how do we make sure that we don't have conflicts of interest. How do we make sure that the projects actually become operational and that those be criteria that we put in place? I mean, it's those sorts of things that we need to really, if we're going to have a future energy policy and trying to implement renewables into our grid and to look at resiliency, to look at the future of microgrids, to look at all those potential energy future issues that are coming at us, I think we do need to look back and look at those recommendations
and implement those recommendations going forward. I kind of feel like that's what we've been doing for, you know, quite a while now, reviewing these programs. And I think the director's been very candid with us about what has gone wrong with those programs. And, you know, data, of course, being one of the big ones, they don't have the resources for data. We need to fix that, you know, if we're going to continue to have energy planning and strategy in this state. And I am one that thinks that absolutely needs to continue. And we need to be looking at what are the solutions to avoiding these problems in the future. And I think you sort of reflected on that a little bit. I think that is where we need to go. But we need to do it with an eye on, you know, what are we going to do with these programs going forward? I'm going to let Senator Edwards go. He's been patiently.
I've been so talkative.
I know. That's good. Good to hear you down there.
I start from the place that, you know, I mean, obviously, given some of my legislative priorities of the last couple of sessions, I'm a strong supporter of cleaning up the energy portfolio in the state of Oregon. Having said that, I mean, some of these things, like we could agree on the mission and or disagree on the mission, as the case may be, but the question of whether, of how those, how these loan or tax credit programs are administered is a good debate that we should be having in and of itself. And some of the things that Senator Whitsitt just enumerated or illustrated from the audit speak to expertise and competence in that particular area, you know, lending. And yes, the department hasn't had perhaps the funding for some of the monitoring and stuff like that, which is a back-end, you know, performance monitoring, see if the goals are being met, and we need to address that, I think, as a part of where we go with the Department of Energy. But in terms of vetting loan proposals and things like that, I think that there's a better way that we can do it, because we won't be able to write all the criteria and get it right in the legislature. Whereas some of these things had had a banker been charged with making some of these loans. Not that I'm a big fan of banks, but it's sort of a really necessary role in our economy, and bankers are a lot better at evaluating loans and loan portfolios, the aggregated risk of the portfolio, and then down to the individual project. And a lot of those things might have been identified just without legislative criteria. And so I do think that we need to have a really serious discussion about who it is that is administering these financial operations in particular, regardless of even if we decide, okay, there's merit to the program, we need to keep the program. It fills a vital space for us, or a vital public purpose.
Yes, I agree. You know, and I think that's, you know, in our discussion of the SELP and probably of managing the financial portfolio, we should be looking outside the Department of Energy to do that. But it's still, you have to have the Department of Energy look at a particular project and see whether it's meeting the energy criteria to qualify to be a loan or to be some sort of investment and incentive. And I think that, you know, unless we want to take Business Oregon and privatize it completely and send it to the private sector, I think they are the agency in the state government that has that expertise to look at underwriting principles for making loans and to manage a loan portfolio to make sure, you know, we try to keep it in the green. So, I mean, that's where I'm falling at this point. Senator Breyer.
I'm just back to the SELP.
Oh,
the representative's question earlier, the Article 11J of the Constitution by initiative, what the citizen said is that the state may borrow money to create a fund to provide financing for the development of small-scale local energy projects. secured repayment thereof shall be a prerequisite of the advancement of money from such a fund. So that is the enabling legislation by the people of Oregon.
But there's no definition of small.
How unusual in legislation.
And that's a...
Well, my point is that if that was passed by the people, did they understand that $20 million would be considered a small loan? I mean, most people wouldn't even consider $20 million as a small loan. They'd consider it huge. $1,500, $1,000 is a small loan. I'm
trying to remember what I thought when I voted on that.
Back in the 70s, you got that one in mind?
When was it put in the Constitution?
1980.
I'm just worried about the loan on my house. So. Well, I think that there seems to be some sort of agreement that we should have, you know, somebody with expertise in financial administration, you know, looking at these loans, doing the underwriting, and managing the portfolio as such, you know, for, I think that might be a good lesson for a lot of different parts of state government besides the Department of Energy as well. So given that, it sounds like I'm not going to infer or assume that the committee agrees that we should continue these incentive programs. They just need better financial management with people that have the expertise to manage the financial administration of them. Do I hear consensus agreement upon that? It's a chair fire.
You're into the who should manage them, which is different from the question of, well, there are two other questions. One is, should the programs continue? And then there's an if so question.
Yeah, I was inferring that. Did
if
you catch
so,
that?
How do you manage the current funding gap that's there? The representative has suggested that we might sell the portfolio and gather enough funds to cover that. Whether that would, what the impact on ongoing program out of that is, I don't know. You have a capitalization question that would continue there. But we really haven't dealt with that issue, and I'm not sure whether the department has ever looked at that or not, or whether the treasurer has looked at that or not. The treasurer has suggested that we stop making loans, which leaves us in a position of, if we just do that, we still have the problem of being able to pay the bond premiums. So we have a hole that one way or another has to be filled by the legislature. It might be that you fill it by selling the portfolio. I'm skeptical of that, but it's probably worth asking the question, and I suppose the comfort level would probably be better if we asked the Treasury to look at it.
Or Ways and Means. And am I correct? Was it about an $11 million, Beth? Do you remember? It was
the shortfall?
Figure? Yeah.
Oh, I think it was higher than that. 30? I can't remember. Sorry. Numbers.
What's the value? Do you know what the value, rough value of the portfolio is?
Chair Holvey, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, the shortfall is a range. It depends on the revenue that's generated through the rest of the portfolio. On the low end, it's $12 million. It can be up to anywhere up to $21 million. So it is totally dynamic within that range, depending on what the other loans in the portfolio are doing over time.
State his name for the record.
Beth.
Hmm? Please state his name for the record.
Oh, my apologies. Michael Kaplan, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy.
Senator Benz.
Senator.
Oh, excuse me, Representative.
Please.
Sorry.
So, a question for the director. Is has the total exposure to loss been realized? In other words, is it possible that some of the loans that currently are performing could fail?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, we do a risk analysis on the entire portfolio. The loans that have, the loans that Senator Beyer referenced earlier have obviously been accounted for and are included in that projection. There are a handful of other loans, very small, that are on a higher risk profile that we have also accounted for and plan into that portfolio. Obviously, we can't see the future. There's a chance that something could go under, but a lot of our portfolio are public entities at this point, namely the university system. So we feel really confident that anything that would impact that deficit has been accounted for to the greatest extent possible.
Mm-hmm. So we had reached a kind of a point where we were debating the type of thoughts, criteria, whatever, that are taken into account by the person making the loan, making the decision to make the loan. And the question I have is this: if we, the legislature, say to you, here is authority to make these loans for green energy projects, then isn't it your right as a department to take that as a bias toward making those kinds of loans, because one of the incentives is that the money would be borrowed and then the money would be spent on this green thing? And that's the much more important thing than the recovery of the money. And what I'm really getting at is, what is it that we should be telling you? Is it, you may make these loans, but by God, we better get the money back? Or is it, we're really interested in spending money on green things, so just make sure you get this stuff loaned out? And the reason I make this point is I've seen this same bias toward getting the money out the door a couple of times here, but many more times back in my law practice, where I was watching the Farm Home Administration get the money out. They were given so much money to lend, and it got lent. And the security and collateral was secondary. So I'm asking you, when you look at us, what is it that you're listening, hearing from us? Is it get the money out there and buy a bunch of green stuff, or is it get the money back?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, as it relates to our loan portfolio, it is absolutely tantamount to its continuing ability to lend that money does come back, that loans are paid off. It is very different than a tax incentive program or a grant program in which you are trying to accomplish an end, and that end can be the sole purpose of the program. For SELP to operate effectively, which it did for 30-some-odd years, it was incumbent on solid underwriting, on appropriate risk-taking, and on making investments that did have a return that was accountable over time. What happened was that the strategy shift pretty significantly, and technologies that had not yet proved out as returning, that would pencil out over the life of a loan, were the ones that were funded. That is an issue both from a strategic point of view and for the underwriting that took place at the time, which in retrospect certainly wasn't sufficient. Right now, the issue that we have more than anything else with SELP is strategy. If you want SELP to continue, what do you want it to accomplish? If the underwriting is solid, then we will be able to, even if a loan goes bad, that's how banks succeed. That's how every bank succeeds, is that they can't lose either way. We should have loans with solid underwriting that are performing and achieving a goal that the legislature sets for us, and the underlying underwriting and risk reduction that allows the state to recover that fund one way or the other. But the strategy is the first. The strategy for what you want us to do is the first step. That is more difficult now because there are more banks that are willing to lend on the things that SELP was able to sort of carve out a niche for in the past. So that is certainly the challenge moving forward.
Yeah, and a follow-up.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, so do we have the measure of the energy good, or whatever the purpose of this program, do we have the measure of that? How much good has been done by virtue of our taking this risk, our being the state?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, the projects vary very significantly, and there was no common metric that we were trying to achieve. I think that the value is that SELP ran without any capitalization. It has been a self-funding program for 30-some-odd years that did close to 1,000 projects, I believe, throughout the state that to the people who borrowed, and especially because we've had repeat customers, you can look at the university system who consistently utilize the program, that it is a fundamentally sound financial tool. That said, there were significant defaults, which were unsound and led the program not to be effective, and has resulted in the deficit that we need to, that we as a state need to deal with at some point. So I would argue that there is a good that came from the program over that history of time, but there is no one common metric that describes that or justifies that, which is an underlying theme we've had with all of these incentive programs, is capturing the data to articulate to you whether we're accomplishing a greater good that the state is actually looking to achieve.
Co-Chair Beyer.
If you just look at the... I'm not sure I agree completely with you. If you look at the language of the Constitution, the intent of the people was to fund small energy projects. And I think by virtue of 1,000 projects, you funded a number of small energy projects. So, I mean, the perceived public good was we should do small energy projects, and that has been achieved to some degree. I don't know about the diversity. You probably could tell us, here's the kinds of things we funded.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Senator Beyer, yes, we absolutely could. The enabling legislation and the direction of the program is incredibly broad. It's very, very flexible on what SELP can lend on. And I would argue that the self-sustaining nature of the program does mean that it was accomplishing what it was set out for. Where I struggle, and I've talked to Representative Bence about this a number of times, is return on investment. Is it enough that the loans were paying themselves off and continuing to fund additional loans? I'm not answering that question. I think that is a viable one or a valid one for the future of the program.
That's the only standard that the Constitution has, is that they should be repayable.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Senator Beyer, absolutely. That's basically the metric, but that's true of essentially any loan program, any bank. Is the bottom line is they're looking to continue to lend and generate revenue.
I don't think that's bad. That apparently is what the people wanted. This isn't something the legislature did. This was the people.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Senator Beyer, I'm happy to say I was 2 years old when the people made that decision. that they can.
It wasn't your
fault.
Well,
in their infinite wisdom, I'm sure it was a good idea. So.
Which way did you vote?
I was a citizen of New York, so I didn't have the opportunity.
Yeah. I think it's interesting looking at the Constitution, you know, because it really doesn't tell us how we end this small energy project loan fund either. It looks like it lives forever in the Constitution.
This is a default.
And in fact, I'm not sure, we'd have to ask legislative council if we could even sell that portfolio off.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, regarding selling off the portfolio, the portfolio is performing. It is generating revenue. If we were to sell it, the only reason to buy it would be to buy it at a discount, in which you could continue to you would realize a profit from the revenue that's generating. The portfolio is sound. What is not sound is the value of the loans that were lost in the past, which are going to continue to be the state's. No one is going to buy our debt from us. And we won't generate enough revenue. Our portfolio as it is not generating enough revenue to solve that debt. So selling it at a discount will also not generate enough revenue to take on that debt. It won't be that the asset as a single asset will hit the red in 2020 is when we anticipate that it will start to go negative. So there's not a profit to realize to pay that off based on selling it.
Yeah, I guess my point was, though, that it may be that we don't really have that option, that we're just going to be faced with dealing with that debt, and selling it off may not be an option. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be real clear. I'm not advocating this. But there is a question. I think what Mike's saying is, I think the answer is that there isn't enough. You could separate out the non-performing loans, sell the performing portfolio, and the question then is, if you sell those, do you have enough revenue to pay off the loans, in essence, there? And then the question is, had you done that, do you have any capitalization left to run a self program? I guess you wouldn't cancel the program. If you did, whatever you had, that would be the amount of money you could loan out, or you could recapitalize.
Representative Vince.
Thank you, Chair. Well, can you get us those numbers? Can you show us on a sheet of paper what Senator Byer just said? Because why would you be operating in the dark? If we're going to consider this, let's see the numbers. I mean, the total loan portfolio is how much? Just a wild round guess. The total amount we are owed that we have loaned out.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Vince, I don't want to give an incorrect number. So that would be very easy to get. We'll make sure to get it to you within a day or two.
A follow up. So could you, in addition to that number, run the numbers for us on this thought of $100 million in loan portfolio? Bad debt of $30 million, sell the portfolio for 50, pay the 30, have 20 left. There, I just made those numbers up. We would like to see that. I would like to see that.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Benz, we can certainly run scenarios, but the deficit is dynamic based on the revenue that we are counting on coming from that portfolio. If we were to sell the portfolio, that revenue would no longer come in, making the deficit bigger. So we would also have to, the deficit isn't static. It's not just $30 million. It's $30 million based on revenue that exists from that portfolio. If we were to sell it, then that deficit would obviously get much, much larger because we'd no longer have revenue coming in.
Yes, I understand that. I do understand that. I would like to see it in writing, because it's unless you run numbers as many times as I have, you won't get it, what you just said. It will be much clearer on a piece of paper. Yeah. So can you get that for us?
Chair Holvey.
Because I get it. I want to make sure everybody does.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Benz, we'd be happy to get that for you. Thank you.
Representative Vega Peterson.
I know that we've been talking about this for a while, but if we're going to have this conversation about self, what we should do with it, what we can do with it, considering, you know, that it's in the Constitution. I mean, I'm interested in having the discussion on what ideas, if we have to own it and keep it, you know, what are some ways to restructure the program? And I want to have that conversation and hear ideas. I think one of the things was that we weren't first in the line of creditors, you know, when some of these loans were made. And is that something that we can change to make this loan program more viable into the future? And I think that there is a hole that we're going to be we're going to have to fill as a legislature, no matter what. But going forward, if this is a program that we have to keep going because we're constitutionally mandated, what changes can we make to make this more viable in the future? Maybe it is putting something in there that says this is the definition of a small loan, and we're not going to go above this number.
Mm-hmm. Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Vega Peterson, that a lot of the work to strengthen the underwriting has been done since those very large defaults have happened. Obviously, sideboards from the legislature about the size or the risk that you're comfortable taking would help, as would the strategy of the thing that you want us to accomplish. Where SELP was successful is that as energy markets are emerging, there is a sweet spot in between those projects that will repay a loan over time. We know it's reliable, but yet the commercial lending space isn't filling that gap because they're still wary. That is where the state is most effective as a lender. That gap has closed significantly as commercial lending has gotten more sophisticated about energy projects. Additionally, the cost of money is so low right now that you can virtually borrow it. That our rates are not as competitive as they used to be in the past. Obviously, interest rates could go up, and all of a sudden we become a much more attractive lender in the future. But the issue that we need is recapitalization. If you want us to lend, we need money to do that. And then two, a strategy. What is it that you want us to accomplish? And if it's just to continue to keep the program self-sustaining, that would be totally fine. But we need the endorsement of the legislature and the treasurer's office, obviously, to sort of get moving. Business Oregon is an attractive place because they are for the program, and I don't want to speak for them, but they're more comfortable and experienced with these kinds of instruments and have a lot of different lending going on. So that's why they make a viable alternative as opposed to the Department of Energy.
Mm-hmm. Representative Benz.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I was interested in, just as you say, the interest rate situation is certainly dynamic right now, and we are in a low interest rate environment. If ever we were going to sell a portfolio that enjoyed high rates of return on, or relatively high rates of return on some of the loans contained therein, now would be the time to do it. we don't have to worry about on the sale paying gain taxes, as would be the case in the private sector. And thus, the timing of the disposal of the portfolio might be really good now and not so much as rates continue to creep up. Secondly, a bunch of those small energy loans were hydro loans. And as the drought continues, those loans are in danger. I know it. And so before our situation grows worse on both ends of the equation, let's see what it looks like today. That's why I would like to see the snapshot in the form of your summary.
This discussion would be really great for now to have afterwards about getting somebody to buy them. Thanks, Cliff.
So many remarks I can make, but none. I will not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator Whitsitt, more on the SELP, or are we moving on to a new...
Actually, just one other thing. The cost of money is almost always based on the risk. And so I guess what I'm going to add to the request for Representative Benz, are small energy projects that are to be built, can they go out and borrow money now from the private sector at less than equal to or less than you're charging for the loan now with the same risk?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, that would be a case-by-case basis, but I would say that the best example is the private sector or the public sector, for example. So we have every public entity has basically the access to the same amount of interest rate for selling debt, for selling bonds. SELP has to charge a spread off of that, off of what we get when we sell a GO bond, for example, to generate the revenue for the program. A county or a city could bond on their own and wouldn't have to worry about that additional spread that SELP charges. The private sector is going to be a little bit different. It depends on how attractive the project is and what they're able to find on the commercial lending. It's pretty tight, though. We are not the as a lender, given where the interest rate market is right now, we are not the most uniformly attractive source of money. There's competitive rates all over the place. So I hope that answers your question with best I can do.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming forward, Mike. So we have had a little bit of discussion around incentive programs. And I think we will have to explore the SELP specifically around the Constitution and whether that does put some restrictions on what we may or may not do in the future with it. So certainly I agree that we do need to look at how we can put better sideboards, put better goals in place for any of our incentive programs. And I can certainly think that that would be a good exercise for us to do. It doesn't answer the fundamental question of whether we need the program, whether it should continue. Certainly we all have opinions about that. But I am one that thinks that we do need to continue planning and stating or trying to achieve goals that do make sure we have plenty of power and energy for our economy and for the people that live in our state, and that we should be trying to do it in a way that tries to lessen the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that we have that we've stated are a great concern to our future climate and economy as well. So in that regard, I'd like to kind of move off of the incentive programs and talk a little bit. At our last meeting, we started a conversation about the idea of having an energy commission that would oversee the Department of Energy, and if so, what would be the, I guess, mission of that commission, and would it be the, and frankly, if we don't do that, should we be looking at revising the mission of the Department of Energy? And so I think we did have a little bit of discussion about that last time, and wondering if people have given that much more thought about a mission statement for the Department of Energy and or a mission statement for a potential energy commission. What, did I miss something? Was that part of our last conversation?
Yeah, that was right.
Oh.
It was.
Oh, okay. Got all these blank stares. Jesus, am I in the wrong committee again? Representative Bentz.
Yep, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did give this a lot of thought, and thank you, Beth, for these mission statements from around our nation. I had occasion to meet with our new policy director, Chris Reinhardt, because I noticed that the Connecticut had their mission statement here. I was going to try to blame him for that. Sadly, he didn't draft it. The interesting thing about all these mission statements is they're so similar to each other, and they contain no common theme, which was unfortunate, because I was hoping that we could find something a little more robust to build our department concept upon. Because if you take all the things out that don't really fit the energy department, or are kind of there because it's a convenient spot for them, there's not much left, and it's irksome. And you can see in the letter that the various groups sent us that they had reached the same conclusion, because all they found was affordability, sustainability, and technological advances, which you'll find in most of these statements. The question is, can we build a department around that small space? That's the question. Remember, in our last meeting, when we reached this point, we were debating, did we want to put the entire, to me, this comes down to two choices. One, move everything someplace else, and it would even be smaller than that, which these folks have suggested, or have the real deal and have a normally structured arrangement, but to have a normally structured department means there's got to be something for it to do. And I am concerned, and this is a great thing about thinking about the mission, and I would challenge everybody here to say what they see this department doing, backing out each one of the other things first. FSEC, the nuclear piece, if we take these incentive programs and move them to BizOrg, what do we have left and that this department would and should be doing? And I had been thinking that, and I've shared this with everyone here, I was quite discouraged with the coal to clean process, and I thought to myself, had we had an energy department, that maybe I wouldn't have been as disappointed as I was in how that process went. Upon further reflection, it's clear that that was a political process, and I'm not sure that having a department would have helped. At least my concerns. It was going to happen. It did, and having a department might not have done. We may have had nothing different than what we ended up with. So I'm at this space where I think maybe most of us are, of wondering, if we continue this department, what is it that it is going to do? How is the state going to be the better for it? That's the question I would put before all of us, because my inclination is that we would be the better for it, but upon looking at this, I am not so sure. So that's where I'm sitting on this right now.
Good chair, Byron.
You're holding my Minnesota, which I kind of liked.
No, sorry.
You know, I one of the it. Things that Minnesota has theirs, but it's happens to be in the commission, happens to be in the legislative branch, not in the executive. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just saying that's where they happen to do it. And theirs was, and I thought it was pretty good. And it talked about evaluating the energy policies of the state, and these are all advising the legislature. Assessing the impact on the future of the environment and the economy, monitoring the state's progress in achieving goals to develop renewable sources of energy, evaluate progress in reducing greenhouse gases, reviews and recommends proposed energy legislation, and it says and takes public testimony on energy issues. I think, and where I've kind of went with that is, I think there's a real big role in the state to have a group of professionals independent of maybe even the regulatory agencies that develops a strategic plan that talks about resiliency of energy. And I'm not just talking about electricity. We tend to be thinking about electricity, but we've got electricity, gas, and liquid fuels, and how that ties into transportation, and then environmental issues around that. I think there's a need to look at that, that would balance those kinds of things with return on investment or cost of the economy, but to have a place that does that. Also, there's obviously an ongoing need. The representative and I have had an ongoing discussion about R&D. I don't think we're a big enough state to make a difference in that, but we certainly can be involved in that and encourage that in some way. And I don't know what that some way is, but it would be nice to have a group of professionals that we look to, as we look to some extent, the legislative policy offices, to tell us about this. So there's where, as we come up with our wild and new ideas as legislators, the future ones, that you have someone can say, well, here's what these people are doing, or here's what you ought to think about, here's what the impact is likely to be. Same could be true in the last debate. That was political, but a lot of the questions that I heard asked in my committee and elsewhere were more, what's the effect of this? And frankly, differences of opinion on what the effect of that would be. Most of the, as is true of legislative process, most of the opinions we get are from your ox's perspective, not wanting to be gored. And it'd be nice to have a group that's separate from that, that was credible with the legislature and the executive and could answer those kinds of questions. The reporting we've got and have had for 40 years, a requirement that issue an annual report, which has really become a very well done document of what is, not necessarily relating to where the state's trying to go or anything like that. So we have some issues around that. And a piece that I don't want to lose that I was not aware of until we got into this discussion is the department plays a very important role now in terms of the emergency planning with regard to liquid fuels. No one else is doing that. I mean, it is, as is our entire emergency preparation program, we have an agency that coordinates it, but all of the various pieces are done elsewhere. And this is one that's not done anywhere else, and they're the only one who has the background on that. And as we looked at the recent tabletop example, the availability of fuels post a major event is going to be one of the most critical elements that we're going to have to deal with. I'm beebling, but that's kind of my role. I think there is something there, and there's some technical, and frankly, there's some technical assistance roles that the department is very good at. They're very narrow, but they're very good in their narrowness on that. There's some question about how well they're used and how they're sold to the community, but I think there's that. And I do think there's a role that is not being done particularly effectively now to, we have the PUC that's looking at the investor owns, but the consumer owns of the three different flavors, there are a lot of them out there, and they're very dependent on what happens with Bonneville. And I'm not sure that we coordinate that voice very well as a state. I suppose there could be arguments about whether we should or not, but certainly an outreach and a discussion with those various groups that affect particularly rural Oregon a lot.
A quick response, Representative.
I think the focus, the problem is not the need. I'm with you on the need. The question is, how do we design it so we get that neutral position? Because we do have a Department of Energy, and they do deal in policy, and I didn't hear a peep out of them during coal to clean. And I think it's because it was a political matter. It had been made, the decisions had been made by political folk. And if we're looking for something that's going to work better than that, the department structure does not help. But I'm with you. I want that neutral voice.
In part, that might be our fault. I mean, at least on my side, nobody on my committee asked them to comment. I don't know how it was on the House side.
Representative Pat.
Thank you, Co-Chair Holby. My concern is a lot the same with Representative Bentz, and that is I wasn't able to get the department to take a position on the coal to clean issue. And many departments don't take positions And so my concern, too, would be, while I agree we need the information, how do you structure that in a way that allows them to feel comfortable to take a stand or make a position without the political issue arising? And are you saying, Senator Beyer, I'm trying to understand, the commission or the council that you want to put together, would they be the body that we go to say, take a position on this particular piece of legislation? And if so, what teeth do they have? I mean, how politically influenced are they? Who appoints them? I mean, there's just, there's a lot.
This is going to be a little bit political, but as departments, having served on both sides of the table, the departments won't take positions without being sanctioned by the governor, but they will answer questions.
But they're so vague.
If somebody else wants to speak up, I'll just say this much. This area is one complex area, okay? And so unless you're in this all the time, as you are, Senator Beyer, you have no clue what questions to ask. Simply would not, because it's when you have folks who deal in billions working with those of us who deal in much more modest sums, they come much more prepared than most of us, than any of us. And thus, it doesn't do any good to have a department sit before you asking, waiting for you to ask them the right question. Now, I was able to do it because I had three utility lawyers come down from Portland to educate me up. And since I've done a little bit of utility work, I actually kind of understood what they were saying, just barely. But there's the problem. And it also goes to the heart of who you're going to have doing this work, because this is complex stuff. And if we're going to get something other than just a recital, we're going to have to design a department that's capable of throwing those kind of assets into the mix. And that's an expensive exercise, as I discussed with Mr. Reinhardt yesterday, having to do with policy, of course.
Representative Jessica Peterson?
Yes. Full name, thank you. I appreciate
yes.
that.
Well, I was going to say, Jessica, didn't you have a question?
No, I don't have a question. I think this is a good dialogue to have. I think that none of the agencies will really go out and give an opinion, because unless they're given leeway to do that. But I do think that having a place where, or having a robust staff that's able to answer the questions of the legislature in a way that's an informed and neutral is absolutely critical to the mission. And I think that we've got some really good staff to do that. So I think that that is a crux of what they're gonna do. It's also gonna be interesting to see how the new legislative policy folks are gonna play into that as well, and how they're gonna, what role they're gonna fill compared to what the agencies have done too.
Senator Olson.
I'm looking at the Oregon Department of Energy Ways and Means budget presentation 2013-2015. And their goal, as they stated, was to reduce the long-term cost of energy for Oregonians. And I have yet to see that. My electric bills keep going up. My gas bills keep going up. Everything goes up. It says here that we spend $13 billion a year on energy, but yet I have not seen the Department of Energy work to create stable energy conditions inside of our state. We don't have oil, but the low carbon fuel standard was supposed to drive people into our state to build ethanol plants. I haven't seen any of that work getting done. So we're just not generating, we're not doing anything energy-wise other than being an ATM loaning out money. It says they're supposed to develop infrastructure for clean energy resources. I suppose you could say FSEC does that. They develop some infrastructure, but FSEC has a problem in the fact that once they develop an energy resource, they just kind of bowl over the farmers and say, we're going to go this way with our lines, our transmission lines. So, you know, we've got a problem there, and you've all heard that and you've seen that. If you look at ESA, they charge people differently. They charge a propane seller for his tanks and his bottles and his regulators, but they don't charge a wind generator or a solar generator who supplies electricity. So the question is, they, as far as I'm concerned, under 2013-2015 budget presentation, they didn't even meet their own goal. on the very first sentence, reduce the long-term cost of energy for Oregonians. That's what they said their mission was.
Well, didn't they reduce the price of gas, or was that somebody else?
The price of gas, natural gas, went down, has gone down.
They didn't do it.
I don't think that has anything to do with any agency having done that. Except those siting agencies who are siting fracking facilities.
Well, I think they do. They do help, all sorts of planning and.
What should they do is the question.
Yeah, and all those things are helping industry and helping utilities provide energy. And so in the process of doing that, they're supposed to be considering some of the other values that the legislature has piled onto them, whether it's greenhouse gases or resiliency or any of those things that we're always looking to the future to make sure we're well positioned to have access to energy. So whether that's in trying to figure out how we're going to put charging stations along the I-5 corridor, for example, that is an endeavor that many have thought is a good policy the state should be pursuing. But somebody's got to put together and put the planning together to figure out where's the right places to do that. I think they have the expertise that gets overlooked a lot. And they do a lot of things that people don't, I think, recognize. I know they're working in the Umatilla area, with some projects over there, trying to map out the future in that area. So, I think they do provide a value there that is helping reduce costs, because there's obviously more expensive ways to do things as well. So I'm just... I guess my comment about the price of gas was a little bit, sarcastic in a way. They don't control the price of natural gas nor the control of the price of electricity directly. So they can help, though, with projects, making them more viable.
That's true, Mr. Chair, but they can't evaluate their results. And they've stated that. They can't evaluate their results, if you can't evaluate a project, then how in the world do you know that you did a good job?
Yeah. Well, they probably could if the legislature gave them the money to collect the data and have the resources to have a data system to start with. They'd probably do a much better job of it if we would follow through with our end of the legislation.
Well, Mr. Chair, they've been in effect since 1975, mm-hmm. and they don't have a single computer. And we haven't updated their computers. Maybe we need to get in on the Oracle kick and get some of that Oracle software that's available to us. Update their stuff. What do you think, Mr. Kaplan? Does Oracle have anything you can use?
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Obey. First, just a comment on agency transparency and answering questions and so forth. One former governor, soon after the inauguration, issued a statement saying that all agencies would channel their answers to legislative questions through the governor's office, which kind of gives you an idea of the transparency. That didn't happen, I guess, but that's sort of the mindset. And as Representative Benz pointed out, you have to ask the right question. Not only do you have to ask the right question, you have to word it just right. And it's an adversarial situation for the legislature to try to get information from somebody that doesn't want to or is instructed not to answer the question unless you have to. The question is for Beth. On this state energy agency mission statements, is that inclusive of all states or is that just a sample?
No, it's okay. Not. All Western states and then a sampling of others.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My general comment is this. I think
we have one meeting down here. Go ahead. Representative Bentz, you're recognized by the chair.
The comments we've been making about our the SILT and about the Betsy and about the RETC apply equally to our discussion about this department. And we should be asking ourselves, how much are we investing to what end? Right? It's, we should be saying, what are we going to get for however much staff we're going to have and how much all the stuff, the computer systems we're now talking about, what is it we're going to get? And that's why I think Senator Olson, you and some others had suggested that perhaps there's a way that we should look at what Washington does, and it takes these disparate activities and puts them under one Department of Commerce. And we might want to think about that, where we find a department that is just on the edge of being big enough to warrant all of the stuff that goes with a department. We might want to ask ourselves that. Because that's what we're asking, isn't it? Do we have enough activity within this realm of interest to warrant this kind of investment? So that's my general comment. And it's because I think we're real close to probably wanting to look at doing something that might consolidate some of the activities we've been engaged in. We have one, reduce overhead, I hope, while maintaining the types of important activities that Senator Beyer was mentioning. Because there's a need for what you're saying. I agree. I think we're just talking about the form.
Other happy comments? Senator Edwards?
No. I have nothing to say at this moment.
Senator Beyer?
Not right now.
I'm mentally preparing for the next hour, the next committee.
So, which brings us to...
I'm sitting here thinking about the agenda.
Which brings us to our next steps. Co-Chair Beyer and I have talked about the charge of this committee and coming up with recommendations for the legislature on the Department of Energy oversight. And we've had a lot of good discussions about a lot of specific programs and, you know, the things that are wrong and the things we could do better. All are important discussions. And asking some of the fundamental questions, I think, are quite relevant as well. But putting all that together, you know, any input that you would like to forward to the committee, and so Senator Beyer and I can, you know, perhaps make a straw man draft proposal on recommendations, or if you think there's specific legislation that's warranted as a recommendation from this committee, we'll take that input as well. Hope to have that discussion on what the outcome of those suggestions might be at our next meeting, October
17th.
So any other items of interest, Beth?
Senator Whitsitt? I have a question. Secretary of State, Commissioner Forensic Audit of the Department, is quite an inclusive and interesting document. It raises a lot of questions, and it would seem to me that this committee should take some time to visit with those auditors about what they found and what else they might be looking for.
Yeah.
We have, I think it was 76 different projects were forwarded to the Department of Justice. Under separate cover. Why under separate cover, I don't know. For one or more concerns regarding civil or criminal or whatever, we don't know. And that's almost $350 million. $350 million. That's what, twice the budget of the Department of Energy. Bigger than any of the budgets of the virtually bigger than any of the budgets of any of the natural resources agencies. I think we should look at it.
Yeah, I think that we actually have had a lot of reports prior to this committee on the Betsy and on the whole Department of Energy, and that audit is available to everyone. I would like to look at that audit and say, here's some recommendations that we ought to be implementing into the where we're headed, where we're going in the future, I'm very reticent to jump in the middle of a Department of Justice activity at this point and hold our own judicial hearing. I just don't think that was the task of this particular committee. But I think that the recommendations in that audit are, and the recommendations we've received from the agency and recommendations we've received from stakeholders give us a lot to work with to fashion programs and the Department of Energy in such a way as we can lessen the likelihood of those sorts of problems reoccurring. So I hear you. I just don't think that in the time frame that we have and the charge that we've been given, that's something we're going to do in October, and maybe at a later date. I'd like to let the Department of Justice do its job and see what transpires out of that. I think we all have copies of the audit. There's a lot of lessons, I think, in there, and I think a lot of them we've already talked about. So,
with respect, there's an entire page of recommendations that we haven't discussed. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, reading through the audit, I've got a dozen questions right here, and I could come up with a dozen more. Not just rhetoric, but actual questions.
Yeah. I'm sure you can. I would like to discuss those recommendations and, put those recommendations on the table of which ones this committee thinks we should forward on. And I think that's, the position that I have at this point.
Mr. Chair, all the people filing in aren't filing in for the tail of this hearing.
Yes, I see that. Thank you for pointing
that out.
We've
got a full agenda.
Yeah. So with that, thanks for the nudge.
Thank you.
With that, I'll adjourn the.
Thank you.
With that, I'll.